RadioInfluence.com.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with
Supreme Court Justice Frankie Val.
And Beans. I laugh every time, and like, I can't help it. Sometimes I try not to.
It's okay. Let it go.
I just have to be free. Let it
Let it go. Be free. Friday, everybody. Welcome to Friday. It's the first official week of the new year.
Oh, gosh. Is it?
Like the first full week.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we had a partial week last time.
We missed a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But this was some week. Eh?
I've had a great time so far. Really have. It's been a lot of chaos, but it's the chaos is really only the explosion. It's almost like a claymore where all of the explosion is just directed in one direction.
Yeah, the Democrats.
Yeah, it's so bad they can't get out of their own way. But then again, they had a really bad hand that they had to play, and they stuck with it.
Yeah. I said,
yeah, go ahead.
No. I don't. Who is advising them? Like, what is happening?
Well, there's nothing left to do. I said this the other night. It's almost as if we're playing a game of poker, and the president pretty much has a full house, and his opponents have a pair of sevens, and we are right. It's right at the time where everybody's got to throw their cards down, but nobody wants to do that because they know how bad the disparity is. So we're just stuck in this betting cycle of betting and raising. And because nobody wants to actually show their cards, and yeah, you know, and that goes on. Yeah, that's everything from immigration to the whole Russia thing, the special counsel, FISA. There's just so much that is being held up. I don't know. So I think it's fun to watch everybody just sit there and try to rationalize that they have more than a pair of sevens in their hands.
Yeah, not only that, but like we get, you know, Mueller just, you know, extended his grand jury for 6 months. And then we get CNN writing. He's wrapping up writing his report now. And it's like, you know, you don't know what the heck is going on or where or why or anything. And let's focus on some of the more fanatical things that have come from that side of the aisle over the past week. And we'll move from there. So there's several things we could talk about. And I know this has been spoken about like ad nauseum at this point, but the response.
Yeah, the response. Everything needs a response now.
The response, these two adults caked up with so much makeup, they look like they're in the moratorium, like in the morgue. Moratorium's not what I'm.
Yeah, you're talking about the mortuary.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. They had a mortician do their makeup before they went on there. It was the same ones. It was just so bad. But I think that the makeup was mostly because of how aged they are. They know how old they are. They know that the newcomers within the party have no respect for them. And they're harder and harder to control, and they actually believe all the nonsense that only used to be trotted out there as pretty little lies to be able to get people to vote for them.
Yeah.
Now the newcomers not only do not give a damn about the old leadership, but they actually believe what was once just a prop.
Look, I heard your interview with Barris, and I love that man. He's so good. And I, you know, Richard Barris is the People's Pundit Daily, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he does polling and all kinds of other things now. And, you know, you guys were having a conversation on your show, the Quite Frankly podcast, broadcast Monday through Friday at what time? 7?
7 to 9 p.m.
There you go. You guys were having a conversation about this very thing, about how Nancy Pelosi has lost all of her power. Like, literally, I don't even know how she became speaker. The only thing I could think is that she threatened to just spill it all on everybody if she wasn't given the position. She used her leverage.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they're cashing in all their chips. Why? It's the same exact thing that happened with Hillary Clinton in 2016 and the superdelegates. I mean, that was just the way it was going to be. It was, I think, the last gasp.
It's crazy because, like, you think about it, they never believed some of the crap that they spouted out. Like, they did. I keep trying to explain this to people. Those Democrats don't believe 90% of the supposed leftist policy that they spew out there. They just were doing it adversarially, so to speak. And now they've cultivated a legion of drones who do believe the stuff that they're spouting out. Like, yeah. I have, and it's dangerous. And I think they realize they've created a monster. They're like the Frankenstein, and there's nothing that they can do to cage these people. They have no respect for the institutions. They don't have any respect for norms. They go out of their way to be disruptive, and their ideals are not American. And they're on the loose, and there's like nothing to do to cage them.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of fun, as scary as it is. But you know what? The GOP side is just as guilty as that, as far as big talk on conservative principles, on American principles of self-determination and individuality and restoring the Constitution. They sold a lot of people a bunch of nonsense to be able to do the same thing. I mean, over the last couple of days, as we're going through who said what, because the best thing about why this shutdown is amazing, and I wanted to go on forever. Unfortunately, it won't. But the best thing about this, and I've had this come up in a couple of conversations I've had, is that the president really doesn't even need to debate these people, because these people are debating themselves from just a couple of years ago. You know, every last one of them are on record, on video, on audio, talking staunchly about how illegal immigration is a drain on the system, drain on the taxpayer, and also endangers the work prospects of the people that they claim to represent the most, the impoverished and all that stuff, ethnic minorities, wherever the hell the problems are in society, the little man that they say that they represent. That's worthy of a lot right there. President doesn't have to do anything because they're fighting with themselves in the mirror right now. So I think that once maximum damage has been inflicted, and it's been said over and over again that there is going to be no negotiation on the wall, that's when you send in the military, build it, and then you can sign whatever kind of funding bill that you want, or a continuing resolution to get things back in order. But just as long as everybody sees where the nonsense is coming from, and also if you go back 2006, 2009, you look at from George Bush on up, everybody talking about funding, and they put billions of dollars into funding walls and barriers and all that. Where the hell are they? I mean, both sides have promised a lot of nonsense. They've appropriated a lot of money. And where the hell did it all go? So it really right now it's time for the Democrats to eat their shit cake. But it's not just the damage should not be relegated to them.
Well, I agree with you. And I think the American people understand that as well. And the thing is that I have a couple points to respond to that eloquent statement you just made. One is that, there's nowhere for the Democrats to go. They're at the bottom now. You know, there's no, like, Trump holds all the cards. Where are they going to go negotiation-wise?
There's nowhere. Right. I mean, they said that there's no negotiating.
Yeah,
so
they're in the corner. I mean, not only that, but what are they going to offer outside of what he wants? Like, there's nowhere for them to go. They're just going to be sitting there like they can't do anything. They're powerless at this point. The only thing they can do, and what's being reported that they're doing, is literally taking bags of garbage and dumping them at parks and stuff to try to prove some kind of a point that because the government is shut down, nobody's cleaning the parks. Like, that's literally like an operation that they're on. And, you know, my thought is like all I have to do and you have to do is say, hey, guys, let's organize and show why the government doesn't, we don't need government to clean up parks. We'll go clean them up ourselves and spend a day cleaning up your local park hard.
Have people actually been doing that?
Yeah, I read that a couple places and I've been searching for it and I would love to get them on video. Love to get them on video doing it. And the other thing.
God, that's like children throwing their food down from the high chair because they know mommy and daddy are going to clean it up. And like protesting, they want mommy and daddy back to clean up. What the hell is this?
Well, you're not surprised, are you?
I'm not surprised at the mentality and the tantrums that they throw. I didn't know that that was actually something that some people were doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, I've read it a couple places. Do I know that it's fact at this point? No. So let's just take that for what it's worth. But I don't put it past them.
Right.
The second thing is, I forget who it was again, but I came across my feed. Somebody did a post where someone blue check on the right did a post where they basically listed out all of the things that we have budgeted for that are just absolutely ridiculous, totaling up somewhere in the means of like $5.2 billion. You know, $180,000 to study the effect of hot air on penguins. You know, stupid nonsense.
Quails on cocaine. That's something that we've been doing for a long time, actually, quails on cocaine.
A lot of different things, like funding, you know, college student intern programs to look at the effect of light on a, you know what I mean? Stupid nonsense that we're wasting money on, like, that's why when I spent all that time reading the omnibus and doing a thread on it, I eventually was just like, oh my God. If any of us ran our household the way the government runs, we would be done for. I mean, done for. Whatever, no doubt. But anyway, the money is not an issue.
One thing to that, if we ran our households the way this is, this is something that I want to bring up on my show soon, because I had an email sent to me by a listener who was a Patreon supporter of mine and had to drop their support for a little bit, but came back after a couple of months and told me this amazing story about how she and her husband buckled down and realized just how bad their credit situation was, and they put all of their time into eliminating their debt, and they went and they retrained themselves to have a different relationship with money. And as we went back and forth, we were talking about just how bad the situation on a civilian level is with credit card debt and how people are spending money they don't have. I think that we have anywhere from $1.25 trillion to about $2 trillion in this country of just credit card debt that is owned by the citizens itself. When you look at that and you really think about what people are doing and how they have been coached into seeing money and credit and debt management and all that stuff, it's starting to make a little bit more sense as to why we are okay with politicians going out there and spending on the government credit card the way that they are. Because I'm starting to think that maybe the average person really doesn't have that good of a sense of household economics if you look at the debt that is being accrued just by everyday people. And, you know, their spending habits on MasterCard and Visa and this and that. It's something to consider because, you know, once again, politics is downstream from the culture. And here we are. And, you know, one other thing on the wall is this. I think that it's really interesting how, once again, nobody's talking about Russia anymore. That's all gone. It's a good thing to have in the background because they need to pull all of the old toys out of the toy chest from time to time to create some kind of a headline, because there's nothing else to go to. Now they're arguing the obtuse nonsense that is, well, Trump said that Mexico was going to pay directly for the wall, as if, like I said the other night, I made a joke about how now they're trying to actually say that Trump always meant that Mexico was going to write a publisher's clearinghouse check to the United States with the memo reading money for the wall, and not that it was going to be through reforming our economic relationship with our southern neighbor, that we're going to be making up tons of money that would then be able to be written off on the expense report and on the balance sheet. I want to just put something out there as well. Not only did he already renegotiate NAFTA, there are so many ways that $5 billion could be made up between the two countries. Number one, a small tax on any kind of Western Union transfer that goes from here to there. And another one, Tracy, I just want to put this on the books. The Center for Immigration Studies, they put something out last year that I've referenced to a couple of times. They put this out. If the border wall stopped between 160,000 and 200 illegal crossers over the next 10 years, and that means 9 to 12% of those who are expected to successfully cross Okay. So over the next 10 years, if we stopped only 9 to 12% of those who expected to cross with some kind of a wall or a barrier, 9 to 12%, the fiscal savings would equal $12 to $15 billion. And as far as the fiscal savings, how those are calculated, that is because that's based on the number that the net, the average net drain on each illegal crosser that comes into the country in a lifetime is about $74,000 each. If they're alone, if they have children, the average net drain is then $94,000 each. So if this is only 10% effective, we will make three times the amount needed to build the entire wall.
I mean, and not only that, but, you know, I said a couple different things and I want to circle back around because I made a note while you were talking to go back to this. But another thing that people don't think about is, you know, Chuck and Nancy and all of them, we have the video we've been playing incessantly over and over again about how they said that they wanted border security a few years ago. And here's my sort of very speculative, somewhat conspiratorial look at this, okay? I'm just going to lay it out there how I'm looking at it. The plan to do whatever it is they want to do, open borders, you know, global alliance, new world order, all of that, which we know is no joke. It's true. We're seeing it happen everywhere. That plan wasn't in ramp-up form until at that point. It wasn't at the point then where they could come out and popularly say the things that they're saying now. So they had to maintain some sort of an air of wanting to secure the border because the American public was not as radical to the left as they are now. And so they needed to keep that facade up. But you think about what this wall means to a lot of people, not just on the left, on the right as well. People who've been ingrained in politics for decades. That wall not only means that they're no longer going to be able to count on as many illegals in elections, which is the obvious thing. It means the cutoff of the illegal drugs that I'm just saying allegedly many of them are profiting off of the drug trade. It also cuts off the trafficking aspect of things, which we know is a very big deal in terms of politics. We're seeing it everywhere. If you guys don't know, you can go to Corey's Diggs on Twitter. She's been detailing what they've been doing in this regard in terms of corrupt politicians in Arkansas and other places. So this is like literally the stop to all of what they were using to advance this plan. And, you know, a lot of people are arguing it's not about the wall, but it is. It is about the wall and about the power struggle all coupled into one. If that wall goes up, it's problems for the plan.
I'll tell you, I've said it before. I said it before and I'll say it again. And that is that this wall, really, if you take a look at it and what you just laid out there only reinforces the idea, this wall is almost like a last ditch effort for the American people to be mostly protected from domestic political parties, not illegal immigration. The only reason why we have people flooding to our borders is because of the welcome mat that has been laid out by people here in this country who see a means to an end by flooding us and welcoming tens and hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants. And another thing there too. So it's not. So once again, when they try to play the race card, it's not about trying to keep brown people out. It's actually trying to protect us in the meantime while we get our culture right, to protect us ourselves from the whims of really backwards ass domestic political parties.
Yeah.
Them because Republicans like the cheap labor, Democrats want the votes. They both come together with these faith-based initiatives and the human trafficking and all along the border. They are all in on it. So I would have to say that it is really just a barrier to try to figure out what the hell we can do politically over here. Something physical that can outlast any kind of shift of power in Congress. That's something I just see as a necessity at this point.
And, you know, a lot of people, too, and I completely agree with you. It's so symbolic in so many ways. And a lot of people, too, just to kind of go to the trafficking route of this for a second, they're saying, well, what is that going to do to stop tunnels? They're going down. They're going down. So who's going to dig a tunnel 40 feet below the ground to get through?
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when then you're talking about a bottleneck situation.
And they're all going to one place. Exactly.
Yeah, you're forcing them into now little little tunnels instead of having hundreds of miles of wide open land that you can just trickle through and not be able to. You're forcing it. It's like the Battle of Thermopylae. You know, you have the 300 that are up against Xerxes. It doesn't matter how much their numbers are if you can force them into a tight situation like that. So.
You know, I was watching that. I love that movie, by the way. And like one time it was on cable or something years ago, and my daughter was really little. And I was like, we can watch that. It's not too violent. And my husband just looked at me and I'm like, what? And he's like, oh, no. And he puts it on for like a second. And it's like heads being chopped off, blood dripping down a hole. Like,
yeah, but it's good. It's a good
very
type.
Good
type of head chopping off.
From there, we can move nicely, Frank, into the media coverage of this tragedy at the border,
which has been a tragedy in itself.
I mean, even people on the left are mocking this. It's bad. I mean, even they even mocked the Chuck and Nancy video. They even mocked that. I mean, they were like, we're never going to win with this. What is this? And you know, Ali Beth Stuckney actually did a video where she parodied Elizabeth Warren. You guys have to see it.
I haven't seen it.
I'll put it in the show notes. It's so funny. She's so good. Oh, goodness. We're taking over the culture war, I swear. But it was really funny. Anyway, so Jim Acosta, you go ahead. I don't even know.
Jim Acosta?
Yeah.
That swollen grape face. I can't. First of all, let me just say, some people have said, I think you were one of them that recently said, you know, I really do pity Jim Acosta. I'll tell you one thing. I do not. Jim Acosta is the annoying little toad in high school that did everything possible to make himself an intolerable member of the population at your school, and then had his lunchtime relegated to hanging out with the lunch lady or sitting by himself at his own table because nobody wanted to deal with him. And because nobody could ever really trust him because he was such a whelp, such a boot licking. Oh my God. He deserves everything that comes his way as far as criticism and everything that comes his way. He's done it all to himself. He's just that kid that ended up sitting alone at lunch. That's him.
Oh, I still feel bad for Acosta. Because he comes off like, I don't know, he has to realize what he's doing, right? I mean, he can't be that stupid.
He doesn't have a brain.
You think he doesn't realize that he just like literally yesterday proved the case?
Tracy, when I hear a grown man stand there or off camera, you hear his voice over and over again talking to Kellyanne Conway. Mm. And I don't even really have a high opinion of her either, to be honest. And to hear him, Ms. Conway, is the president going to tell the truth tonight? Is the president going to tell the truth tonight? Does he plan on telling? And he says the same nonsensical thing over and over again, which, I mean, the question itself at the very best is just a rhetorical, nonsensical thing to ask, and to say it over and over again as if he's going to get a well Kellyanne Conway what was she going to say to that? Well, you know, I was talking to the president and he decided he would lie.
He's
just saying, you know, maybe he'll tell a little bit of truth, but of course there's always that option to not tell the truth. So, you know, we're thinking about that, what the approach tonight is going to be. Like, what the hell is he? It makes no sense. So that's why I say he doesn't have a brain.
He's had a bombshell week so far, right?
Bombshell. Well, between he and Chuck and Nancy, it just goes to reaffirm over and over again, these people are working off of a very, very limited and outdated script. I mean, Chuck and Nancy coming out and doing their little act over there for 5 minutes. I was trying to line up what the president had talked about, the statistics he put on out there, and how he addressed the nation about a very complex and sensitive issue. Then I went over to look at Chuck and Nancy and what they supposedly responded to. And I don't know what speech they responded to. I don't know what they were talking to.
They probably didn't even know what he was going to say when they did that.
Yeah, they were responding to the speech they wish he had given.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand. Like, it was so stupid. I mean, it was ridiculous. So Acosta yesterday at the border, he goes to a part of the border where there's a wall or steel slats, And he starts talking about how it's so tranquil there. And like everybody was like, wait a second. Are you serious? Then later on, like everybody called him out on it and he went after Don Jr. basically saying, you know, they went back and forth in a Twitter argument. And then he posted another video from a place without a wall on the Rio Grande. And the water is there blocking on. He's like, you can look right across this. It's so tranquil. You can play shuffleboard here. And there's Mexico on the other side. And I mean, amazing. And then to top it all off, making the whole dollop on the cake was something that came out this morning. It was by KUSI News, which is a local affiliate in the San Diego area, where they said that CNN called their newsroom to get a reporter directly to talk about a local view of the debate surrounding the border wall. They took one of their like best beat reporters that's always on scene there doing that coverage and had him talk to them. And he told them, everybody down here agrees a wall would really help us. And the bigger concern for us isn't the wall itself, but how the migrants are being treated. So they did lean towards the poor migrants section of things, but CNN refused to air it. And they went live and they talked about it. They said they refused to air it because we probably did, you know, we didn't fit their narrative.
Oh, absolutely. Because you know, the whole thing here is that the wall is unnecessary and a big political overreaction because Donald Trump doesn't like brown people. So it doesn't matter if they say – if they have some kind of conciliatory opinion on how the migrants are being treated. And I agree. Listen, the whole migrant horde, the caravan that came up and the new one that's forming, this is all the machinations of a group of people who do not care what these people are going through. They are inviting them over here into political turmoil. They are encouraging people to make a very, very long and unsafe trek to walk around and to travel alongside of dangerous people that they cannot trust and they cannot vet, all to be able to heighten political turmoil here in the United States. They are poker chips. They are not human beings to the people who are trying to protect them in the news and use them as human beings that need to be, rallied around and uplifted and all that. So it's the people who are trying to defend them are behind the scenes, the ones keep putting them in danger.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
They're the ones paying for their fake caravan, you know, trips, putting them in the back of trucks. And, you know, a lot of the reporters that were down there on the scene talked about how organized it was. And, you know, a lot of them turned around and decided they didn't want to be there anymore after this last stunt. And they got flights home. Who's paying for that? Who is paying to fly these people that they just pretended walked 3,000 miles home?
Well, hey. Why do you think that all of the it's the same exact reason why MSNBC and CNN completely pulled the plug on coverage of the migrant caravan parked over there in Tijuana?
All men.
After about a week and all of their correspondents on the ground in Tijuana could not look into the camera and lie with a straight face about what the sex makeup out there was, who's taking what's really going on, how women and children were being used as props and human shields. They couldn't lie. Even yeah. MSNBC reporters in the field couldn't lie. That whole story went away in a week
yeah.
because getting pummeled every night.
Yeah, because they can't, you know, you're absolutely right. It was not the narrative they wanted to. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day and they said, you know, this is someone who's not, they're not on any social media at all. And all they have is what they hear and who they talk to and what they see on television when they watch television. And the person said to me, I really, and this is a very, you know, an older guy, very smart, intelligent. I really feel like the mainstream media should be brought up on charges because they're lying to the people and they're allowed to do it with reckless abandon. And there should be some penalty for it. And I'm like, you know, I mean, they're culpable in so much. They're culpable in deaths from extremists who have flipped out because of what they've reported.
Well, also, let me just say this. You want to talk about seeing through, and you know, we're spending a lot of time on immigration, but then again, that has been the entire week. So it's good to get all this out and just empty the tank. For them, for anybody to say that we really care about border security, we just want to talk about efficiency, and we want to talk about things that are smart. Number one, $5 billion when we're spending trillions every year is unbelievable. That we add at least $1 trillion to the debt every year. $5 billion is unbelievable. It's almost real money, you know? To think that $5 billion sounds like $500,000 at this point, is one thing. But the other thing is that when you really look at how even their fellow traveler judges go out there, and you remember about a month ago or so, Tracy, we had that one judge that was putting in an injunction or something.
Yep.
That wanted to make it so that anybody who was apprehended at the border, even if they were clearly trying to evade authorities and avoid ports of entry, could still claim asylum if they were caught.
Yep. Yep.
Which completely negates the whole point of go to the port of entry, present yourself, and let's see what happens when we process you. So for them to say that we are concerned about border security and are not at all looking for open borders and this and that, but then to still be at war with their friends in the judicial branch, to actually go out there and try to redefine what actually illegal immigration is and go right down to the vocabulary that we use to describe the situation, they do not care about border security. It is so they're giving them voting rights. They created sanctuary cities and states. It's absolutely asinine to say that these people care. There's something else going on.
We will end on this, I guess, unless you have something to add to it. I lived in an area on Long Island that was infested with MS-13. Infested with it. It's one of the reasons why I left. You know, it was horrible. It was a very nice neighborhood that turned into a shithole, to use Donald Trump's word. There is an article today that I shared from Eyewitness News, ABC 7 New York. There were three MS-13 members who stabbed a teen in this town, and all of them had entered the U.S. illegally. Listen to this, okay? According to police, Lopez, which is the one who stabbed, entered the United States illegally on December 8th, 2016. He was picked up by the Department of Homeland Security in October of 2017, but a federal judge released him from custody in June. Zuniga and Molina entered the country illegally as unaccompanied minors. Molina was picked up by DHS in July of 2017, but released by a federal district judge in November of 2017. So these people were all in custody, released by judges to go back out onto the streets, remain illegal, gang members who then stabbed American citizens.
Yep.
You can't make a better case. I said, here are the sweet kids the Democrats want to protect. The sweet unaccompanied minors. This is the half of them that aren't being used in trafficking. This is the other half of the unaccompanied minors. And it's sick. It's sick. And I'm serious. Like there were several stories. I'm not exaggerating this, where we would hear a young girl would be walking home from high school in broad daylight. She would be swooped up off the street by this gang, sexually assaulted to the most heinous, horrible level that you could ever even read about, and then dismembered and left in this field that had like marshland, you know, nearby, and nobody would be able to find her for however long. And this happened several times. This is what they do. For Nancy Pelosi to call these people, you know, to not agree that they're animals. It's you don't understand, Nancy, because you haven't lived this. It's horrible.
First of all, just the things you have to do to be initiated into these gangs is criminal. So, I mean, it's not like you can get in. Oh, well, listen, I wasn't one of the murderers in MS-13. I was just the accountant.
Exactly.
I was just a janitor. Mm-hmm. You know, I was trying to put food on the table for my family. You know, these are
It's not that. They're all criminals, literally all of them. And I did a bunch of pieces back in the day, a couple of years ago, when Donald Trump first announced his targeted approach to them. And everyone was like, well, why is he doing that? That's, you know, that doesn't make any sense. And everybody came out and said, they're not even a big deal. They're not even just here and wherever they came from. They're a global global organization. It's not even like they're just, you know, on this side of the planet. And I did a bunch of pieces on their belief system. I did a whole bunch of stuff. I'll put them in the show notes too. Remember to remind myself. Anyway, that's what we have to say today on immigration.
Yes.
In case it wasn't enough for you. Jeez.
Okay. It's all going to hell. All going to hell. But it's they've got less to stand on.
They have nothing to stand on.
Less than they even had before, and they have nothing.
Yeah. They're below the ground now. Like, only Nancy Pelosi's head is sticking out like a freaking whack-a-mole.
Anyway. Yeah.
Want to get into something interesting I found when I'm doing this massive, like, dissertation on William Barr, who is having his confirmation hearing on the 15th and the 16th. Now, I'm trying to get it done before then, but I got to tell you, the amount of information out there on this guy is really unbelievable. So I start doing all this research and I find this oral. He was, let's just give some background. Barr was a CIA. He went to college. He had a degree in China studies. After college, he went into the CIA. He was in the CIA for 4 years. He was in the CIA when Bush was the director of the CIA, the senior Bush. Then he leaves the CIA and he becomes an attorney. He goes to law school while he's in the CIA. He's going to law school at night. An interesting life. Then he leaves there. He gets brought into the Justice Department under Bush as like a deputy attorney general, because the attorney general that's there is like mired in, his name is Thornbow, I believe. He's mired in controversy. I mean, bad. And long story short, the second 2 years of Bush's term, he decides to appoint Barr his attorney general. So, and this is during Iran-Contra and all that too. So it's an interesting timeline. So he appoints Barr his attorney general. And there's in this testimony that I found that he gives an oral history of the presidency that when he was there, he talks about all kinds of things. And one of the things he talks about is how Bush decides he's going to appoint him as his attorney general. And he says to Bush, Bush's like aide says, we're not getting very much political capital out of you. Because he was like not a well-known guy. You know, people want to appoint their AGs and be able to use it somehow in political gain. And so he says, I want to appoint a deputy attorney general who's going to give me the capital that I could use right now. And Barr says, no. That's not okay. If there's any sunlight between the deputy attorney general and the attorney general, the department doesn't run correctly. It just doesn't work. And he says, let me put it to you this way. The department, the AG, the department, the deputy attorney general has the balls of the AG in his hand. I don't want someone having my balls in their hand that I don't know. Mm. So that tells you what Barr feels about his deputy. Right?
Yeah.
He's going to want to appoint someone or have someone on board that he can work with. And it's ultimately the president's decision. But in this case, they allowed Barr to pick his own deputy attorney general. And he picked someone named Terwilliger, however you want to pronounce it.
I'm taking notes over here because it's the first time I'm hearing about this.
Yeah. So he appoints this guy, Terwilliger, and the name immediately flags me because I remembered it, that name, because I had a really hard time pronouncing the name. And in the comments of the video, because I made an issue out of it in the comments of the video that I did with this name in it, everybody was trying to tell me how to pronounce the name correctly. It's one of my pet peeves. I can't pronounce things. So I started doing some research and I realized this. Do you remember when the Justice Department accidentally, the guy was researching a case and inside of the case was a line about Julian Assange needing to have a sealed indictment?
Wait. This was a couple of weeks ago, right?
It was back in November, I believe.
And it was that, like, whoopsie, we showed you an indictment with Assange's name on it kind of thing, and then it went away?
Yeah, it was basically in an order for another case. Like, they used the Assange one as a template for this one, and they forgot to remove the line about Assange.
And okay, I remember that, yes.
So the agent, the U.S. attorney who was on that pleading was Terwilliger, but not the same Terwilliger, his son. Now, here's what's interesting about this. He was specifically appointed by Jeff Sessions, and there was an article that came out at the time in Washington Post that said one of his sole responsibilities was to oversee the case against Julian Assange. So now that corroborates it there. He also is really, really, he was chief of staff for Rod Rosenstein. Really, really, really close to him. Really close to him. And he was promoted to this U.S. attorney position in the district, like one of the most important districts in the country. So he was Trump appointed. When he's confirmed, he gives a speech where he talks about how, you know, he helped to shepherd Rod Rosenstein's nomination through the confirmation process. And it's interesting to me, and here's why. Because we have Rod Rosenstein now. The news comes out that he's going to quit when Barr takes office, if he does. Then he comes out later on and says, no, 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 that's not true. I'm going to stay on board until the Mueller report's released, right? And I don't, knowing how important Barr feels his deputy attorney general is, and knowing that he appointed the U.S. attorney who's really, really, really close to Rod Rosenstein as his, the father of that guy, as his deputy attorney general, I feel like those connections are just ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I think that there's a lot here, especially hearing it for the first time. A lot here.
It's very complicated. And there's one more thing we can go into now. He was in charge of, he tried to stay out of like judgeships and picking judges and stuff for confirmation. You know, it's a daunting task. And Barr tried to stay out of that. And he was ultimately, the way they did it was to compromise with Democrats. They would allow them to put up two names for every third spot. So like every third judgeship that was up, they would allow the Democrat from wherever to give two names to fill that one spot. And then the DOJ would pick the name that they felt better with. And for some reason, Moynihan in New York wanted two spots, and he wasn't budging on it. So he presented two names and he wanted two spots. And Barr said, okay, I'm going to interview these people myself, and I'm going to pick one of your two for, he gave some kind of compromise to him, and he interviewed both of those people. And he came to the conclusion on which one was better. And what the judge that he ended up putting in there, you're going to lose it when I tell you who it is.
Who is it?
Sonia Sotomayor.
What?
Yep. So like in a warped way, William Barr was responsible for the Supreme Court appointment of that judge.
This is not necessarily a exciting thing. This might be a what?
Well, I mean, he didn't know at the time that she was going to go on to become a Supreme Court judge. He was just filling an appointment on a circuit.
Okay.
So it's not like he said, oh, one day you'll be a Supreme Court judge. And he gave us Clarence Thomas. That was his pick. Just to say. Okay. So listen, from everything that I've done so far, I am really not, I'm not like jumping up and down for joy on this guy. I'm really not. I've read like so many opinions he's written for the DOJ and stuff. And there's two things that are clear. Number one, he is staunch on immigration. Staunch. Number two, he is staunch on the power of the executive branch, meaning he'll defer to it at all times. Like, he weights the executive branch of government like all the way up on the totem pole in terms of their power.
See, this is the other reason why, that especially for the term that Trump is going to be president, I have learned to not care about how temporary everybody's positions inside of his cabinet is, because it seems like people really just come in to act on an issue that is within their wheelhouse and their strength.
Yep.
And then they're gone.
Yep.
When I heard that Jim Webb was a name that was just made its way around the internet for a couple of days about a potential replacement for defense secretary, I said, that's really interesting, only because I know that these people coming in seem to be temporary workers. It seems like Trump knows that he has very limited time. 4 to 8 years is not a lot of time to reverse generations worth of damage. So what do? You bring in somebody who's really a hawk on Asia. How can we reshape our Asian relations, and how can we get North Korea tackled? Then you bring somebody in who is a hawk on the Middle East and wants to get the hell out, like Jim Webb.
Yep.
Oh, and I was thinking to myself, I understand he was a Democrat, a Democrat candidate in 2015. He caught my attention when he was on the stage with Hillary and O'Malley and all them. But I'll tell you, he had a really good idea about the Middle East, and he was against the war in 2003. His son is a Marine. He wanted people to not have their sons and daughters go out there into this meat grinder for something that has absolutely no real feasible exit plan. It should have never been started to begin with. So I don't know. I mean, maybe this guy Barr, whatever we do look at in his resume, that is intriguing, that is exciting, might be the only real reason why he's coming in. And I wouldn't be surprised that by 2020, he's been replaced by somebody else. I just wouldn't be surprised at this point.
And you shouldn't be. And the other thing, don't forget his studies in Columbia and in college were on, he majored in China. I mean, that's his major. That's what he graduated with. So Chinese studies, I mean, that's literally what he dedicated his entire career in college to outside of law school. And other things about him too. He's against what the whistleblowers for the government, what the whistleblowers in the Clinton Foundation case are doing right now. He's against the kind of like bounty hunter type reward based government reaching out to individual citizens and paying them when they identify some kind of penalty being created. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because they get a percentage of whatever the government decides, you know, the tax debt would be, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. He's against that. He hates it. Doesn't like it at all. You know, he was also involved in recommending, I forget which guy it was, one of the pardons that George Bush did, in Iran-Contra. So it's very interesting. You know, he's young, he's, brilliant. Whether or not I agree with him is a different story, but he's very, very smart. I have to say this too. Somebody I've interviewed with this person several times, Dr. Dave Janda, who was instrumental in the healthcare issues that we went through, who spent a lot of time on the Hill and you know, got to know a bunch of insiders there in Washington. He said in an interview he gave recently that this is what he said, and this is purely coming from his sources. I can't corroborate a bit of this, just to throw this out there at you guys. Because everybody's freaking out. They're saying Lindsey Graham comes out and says, oh, him and Mueller are best friends. They're best friends, Barr and Mueller. Their wives go to Bible study together. Barr, his daughters were married and Mueller was at his daughter's weddings. And I'm thinking to myself the entire time, what a conflict of interest that is, you know? And mm-hmm. And people are saying, oh my God, he's friends with Mueller. He's horrible. Everybody's kind of jumping to make a determination that he's a swamp rat. And there's evidence to demonstrate that he is, and there's evidence to demonstrate that he isn't. But Dave Janda said that basically what happened is right before, during the funeral of Senior, he says that he was told that Junior flipped, came to Trump, spilled the beans, so to speak, on a bunch of different things that were going on, gave them tons of information, and in return, Trump agreed to nominate someone to AG who would keep their family name out of the mud. And so he nominated Barr right after Bush died.
Now, that is a really interesting piece of unsubstantiated speculation.
Yes, it is very interesting.
Man, that sounds pretty intriguing right there.
It makes sense. If you take a look at, listen, we talked about this, the notes at the funeral. I'm sorry, people out there who will come to my Twitter page and call me a conspiracy theorist. There was video of several people in very high places getting notes that were hidden inside of their programs at a funeral, dropping out onto the floor because they weren't expecting them to be in there, and then visibly upset reactions coming off of them when they read the contents of said note. Mm. At a funeral for a former president where, you know, things are not just left willy-nilly places like that with all those dignitaries.
I'm telling you, I don't know. That's interesting. The thing that gets me though is that, is there ever going to be a time? I mean, especially if a deal like that is made, and here's Dave Janda talking about it in interviews, that this was happening behind the scenes. Obviously, that's something. If the Bushes wanted to go cut a deal to keep their family name out of it, then how the hell are we knowing about the deal and now their family name is in it.
Well, yes, agreed. I would think that's a very good point, that they would want to keep it quiet so that this didn't happen, right? But it's the rumor mill. It's never going to be reported on by anybody like, you know, who supposedly has establishment. You know what I'm saying? It's a rumor mill. So people just dismiss this and say, freaking crazy conspiracy theorist, blah, blah, blah. But let me tell you something, okay? We had John McCain go. We had Lindsey Graham turn into a new person. Then we had George Bush go. And we had the William Barr appointment. Somewhere on the internet a few days ago, before this article came out, I read somebody saying that Harry Reid was going to be next. And I'm like, Harry Reid? Not only was Harry Reid so involved in Spygate, he was also super duper involved in black budget programs, the Pentagon space program, all of the black budget stuff. He was like a UFO aficionado, Reid was.
I know.
And very interesting. All of a sudden, after I read that, an article comes out saying he doesn't have any time left to live and he's going to die. And I'm like, die from what? I've never heard of him being sick.
Well, the rumor I heard was pancreas.
He has pancreatic cancer. Yeah, and he's got like days to live or something, months to live, they said, whatever the case may be. On top of that, we've got Ruthie girl who's not feeling so well, and there's rumors everywhere that she's about to step down. And it seems like these people are kind of like, we've had a lot of high profile passings in the past year.
Yeah. And you know, I'll tell you, I always suggest people, it's mostly the first two seasons, but House of Cards, you ever watch it?
We say this every week now. No, I've never watched it.
Well, I just watched the unfortunate last season. Lauren and I said, you know what? We watched the entire thing. Let's just see what the last season was. We were curious about how they were going to pick it up without Kevin Spacey. And let me tell you, I was confused the entire time. I probably needed to review the first five seasons first, but I was confused the entire time. And then whereas the last episode, I was very intrigued as to where it was going and how it was going to end. The last 10 seconds were so god awful. The last 10 seconds, so god awful. I was like, oh my God. Lauren and I looked at each other and said, that's how it ends? Oh, so stupid. But the one thing that was in this season was tons of people being eliminated. People faking their own deaths being on the books, people who had died maybe a couple of weeks prior to the death's announcement. Like, let me just say,
just like we're seeing, basically what we suspect we're seeing anyway.
Absolutely. Well, think about when was the last time anybody saw George H.W. Bush in public prior to the announcement of his death? Seriously, he could have been dead a month before and they're just waiting there. And, you know, waiting. Just keep the name on ice. I'm sorry, but I still, until I see any kind of real definitive proof, I believe that was done with bin Laden. Number one, you can't tell me that it is something worth celebrating that American intelligence services or a combined effort of the world's intelligence services from all the major governments in the world were not able to find a 6'6" man on dialysis for 13 years hiding in the mountains. 13 years he evaded the entire world's intelligence services. That's something to celebrate? No way. No, I just feel like if it's under certain circumstances, you can keep a person alive in a few different types of ways. And because a death, a funeral, closure, whatever the hell it is, it can be very influential in a lot of different ways.
The day before McCain died, we heard how bad he was. And then all of a sudden the next day he was dead.
Right.
You know, like it's there was another thing that I wanted to talk about in relation to all of this too. Shoot, and I don't remember what it was, but it was something really interesting that's happening that I wanted to talk about with you. Oh, goodness. I hate that. I hate when that happens. It was in regards to all of these people passing away and all of this stuff that's going on lately. And, you know, you can go into the weeds as much as you want here, but, like, the fact of the matter is it's a lot of key people that were really important players in a gazillion different things in our history. You know, George Bush was the first one that came out and said that there was a new world order being formed in public. John McCain, I mean, let's not even talk about all the stuff that he was involved in. No offense, guys. I mean, it's just serious. Like, people get mad at me sometimes when I'm like, George Bush wasn't a good man. I'm sorry. And then Not only that, but we've got Biden talking about wanting to run for president. And I shared this tweet thread the other day. He will not last a month. I hope they put him up there, because there is nothing but video clip after video clip after video clip of him acting ridiculously inappropriately with children.
Creepy. Very creepy.
It's if he ever got anywhere near my kid, his hand would be 6 inches from her before he got a foot to the groin. Okay? I don't care who he is. These people, these parents that let this man touch their children this way, they're almost guilty themselves.
Oh, yeah. No, listen, when Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi took to the television screens across America the other night, I felt like this reinvigoration of the meme magic came back.
Yes.
2020 is going to be
off the hook.
Off the hook. They're going to, anybody they run out there is going to be destroyed. Elizabeth Warren would be destroyed. Joe Biden destroyed because of the children. I mean, there's just so much out there. Kamala Harris has a lot of problems.
Oh, yeah.
She's got a lot of problems herself.
Listen, there's rumors that not only that, but there's rumors, a couple things. Number one, there's rumors that there's some nude photos about to surface of our friend Sandy.
Oh, really?
You're going to like that, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I want to, you know, get an assessment of what's going on. But aside from that, I don't think that should be a reason why somebody should be, you know, if they have some good ideas. And I would still vote for somebody who had really great ideas and American ideas.
This is Ocasio-Cortez we're talking about here.
I know, but, you know, people take their clothes off.
You're the one with the pics floating out there of yourself, so I guess you're sympathetic.
It's floating out there, not like I was a plague girl or anything like that. I'm just saying, you think about your own past and everybody had. You can never expect where things are going to take you. It's almost like getting a tattoo. I don't have any tattoos that I regret, but I know plenty of people who have tattoos that 10 years later they're like, you know, this meant a lot to me when I first put it on, but God damn, I wish I didn't do it. It's just one of those things. You're in college. You feel invincible. You want to take your clothes off. You do it. And then, you know, 10 years later, you know, I want to go into public service.
You're right. You know, you're right. You're right. I guess I wouldn't. I mean, it's not going to change my opinion of her. It's just really interesting. Right. This is what I wanted to talk about with you, Frank, that I forgot. And I wanted to do it last week, too. Not your genitalia this week. We'll do that next week. Do I feel blushing?
No blushing. I have a smile from ear to ear, but that's just fixing that.
Okay. So it's Game of Thrones and the parallels that Trump has made with his poster and the wall. Have you seen Game of Thrones?
Oh yes.
Okay.
I'm waiting patiently. I think we have back in May, right?
Yeah, April, May. Yeah, I can't wait. One of the things you mentioned when you were talking about House of Cards is how many people they were killing off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what this last season of Game of Thrones is going to be like. Like, people are just going to keep dying left and right and left and right. If you haven't seen the show, you got to watch it. I don't care if you are a left-leaning or right-leaning person. It is so indicative of everything. It is brilliant, right?
Mm-hmm.
I consider myself like, if I could be any one character from Game of Thrones, it would be what's her name? The dragon girl. What's her name? Shit.
You're talking about Daenerys?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be my character.
Dany.
Huh.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Yesterday I was thinking about this too, because we just wrapped up House of Cards, and then I started thinking about Game of Thrones coming back. And it really just, that's what it is at this point. You look at how our obsession with seats, who gets to sit in what seat, what are you willing to do to take down another person to get into that seat? It really is a little bit more what we're doing right now on planet Earth 2019. It's Game of Thrones, but it's a little bit less battle axe-y.
Yeah, well, you're not seeing people getting their heads chopped off and everyone accepting that it's okay.
Exactly.
But figuratively, you are.
Absolutely.
And so Game of Thrones, like, a lot of people are taking his picture and his poster, his movie poster that he put out, as though it is only related to the wall. And they don't understand the analogy of the wall. Like, people are mocking him But the point he's making is that everybody was like, we don't need the wall. We don't need the, you know, like the wall kept out the White Walkers. And as soon as they could get over the wall, what happened? They took over. They zombified everybody.
They already claimed one dragon.
That's scary. Listen, that dragon.
Horrible. I knew what was going to happen. I knew they were going to resurrect it. I knew it. And now it's 2-on-1. And I just hope that Dany starts spitting out some new eggs because she needs to stop
messing around with her brother first.
Oh, no, that's going to be a union. That's going to be one hell. I'll tell you, it's been pretty much they've been previewing this for a long time. Every time it has come up in the last, I mean, just the last season alone, how she had to keep reiterating, I cannot have children. Of course you can have children. You just didn't have the right partner.
Yeah.
So here comes another Targaryen, Jon, and she's finally going to be paired up with somebody who can help her bear children. That's what's going
to
happen.
I was waiting for Jon to get it on with someone the entire series.
Yeah.
Like outside of that one, you know, the Hobbit girl, whatever her name was, that he loved and turned on him way back in the...
Ygritte.
Yes. She was cute.
I liked her a lot. Like the redheads, something they do, you know, I like redheads.
They're okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I like them.
Yeah.
It's like that middle ground between brunette and blonde.
Well, we all know that you, you make exceptions for some blondes.
Yes. I make exceptions for some. I would make exception for Kyrsten Sinema for a couple hours. Lauren knows. I tell Lauren, first of all, I run this all past Lauren first. So it's not like I'm, how dare he? Listen, he's a married man. Lauren and I, we joke about all this stuff, so.
No, listen, you ever have those conversations with your wife where you're like, okay, if you had a choice between this person and this person, who would you want to be with?
I told, that popped up. We went to go, what movie did we go see last? And we saw the preview. Oh, I think it was the Queen film. When we went to go see Bohemian Rhapsody, and we were sitting there and the previews were coming on and we saw the preview for Aquaman and she saw, you know, Drogo pretty much.
Uh-huh.
And he's wearing nothing but just his Speedos. And she was like, let's go see Aquaman. I was like, okay. I said, yeah, okay, fine.
You know, it's funny. Like I used to back in the day, and then we'll wrap up because we're running long. But I used to back in the day, like really... Like, look at, like, when I was growing up, I had a huge crush on Jonathan Taylor Thomas from...
Son of a bitch.
Why?
Everybody in my class had a crush on Jonathan Taylor Thomas, and we had... keep going, and I'll tell you.
No. I mean, I had a huge crush on him, and then when I got older, I loved Brad Pitt, and then I loved George Clooney, and then I started not caring about what celebrities looked like anymore at all very, very rapidly after that. And I don't think they're that special. I just don't. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Yeah, no, celebrities don't really get me that much. They don't. I used to. I think Tiffany Amber Thiessen was one I liked a lot.
What about Dushku?
Who?
Elijah Dushku.
What the hell's that?
Oh, never mind.
JTT, though, all the girls in my third and fourth grade class absolutely loved him. And me and the rest of the boys in the class, you know, we were secretly so jealous that this little bastard got everybody's attention and we had no girlfriends. So what we put together all these crazy ideas of how we can go attack LA to wipe him off the map. And we said, I brought to class two books. I brought to this one book on classic American sports cars and another book on marvels of manned flight. So we were able to go through all the attack helicopters. We were trying to think about all the attack helicopters we should use in zeroing in on JTT to finally get rid of our enemy. And then afterwards, we were thinking, okay, so now – once we use this helicopter to take out JTT, what is going to be our getaway vehicle? Which is kind of stupid now that I'm – well, very stupid on
another –
we
had a helicopter.
We had a helicopter. Just don't get out of it. Fly away. You know. So we had this KA-50 Werewolf. We're going to rain down hell on LA. Then we're going to get into a Ferrari F40 and speed away at 200 miles an hour. And then nobody would ever suspect a thing. We'll be back in New York before we knew it.
Listen, I had no idea about any of this before I mentioned his name. This happened. Like, I had no idea that there was so much controversy with Jonathan Taylor Thomas in your childhood.
Yeah. Well, it's not controversial. We all liked Home Improvement, but it's just like...
Why didn't you just throw Pamela Anderson in their faces?
Pamela Anderson was... That was more like 4 years later, seventh and eighth grade, when we started, you know, that we learned about Pamela Anderson. We saw that the... We got the internet, so that means we were actually able to start getting clips of the honeymoon video with Tommy Lee. And that's when we started getting on that. But Tiffany Amber Thiessen, she was one that we were able to obsess about. You know, if we can obsess about Tiffany Amber Thiessen publicly and in a way that we were so focused on her that we did not even know that we had female classmates, maybe that would make the female classmates jealous. And in some respects, it did. And then what the hell else?
Look at what you were willing to dedicate your time to at that age. I keep forgetting how much younger you are than me. Mm. Look at what you were able to, like, you guys really spent a lot of time on this.
Yeah, when we had to. It's not like this consumed every day. And we did other things.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. No. For some reason, like, your sound kind of cuts out on me sometimes and I start talking over you. Maybe we should start ending the show every week with a story from your school days.
Well, both of our days. I don't know. Okay, fine.
Let's do it. Yeah, implemented.
Maybe the topic. Hopefully something comes to mind.
There's got to be something. We'll just tell old stories about ourselves at the end.
Yeah, I was thinking about one story yesterday that got me really, really embarrassed.
Uh-oh.
Really embarrassed. It had nothing to do with girls, though. It's just, you know.
We'll save it for next week.
Yeah, that's all. If you're not embarrassed at what you did even 4 years ago, I don't think you're growing. So.
That's true.
Yeah, or maybe you started off with a handicap. Who knows? Okay, that's all I had to say.
Well, guys, that'll about wrap it up for today. These show notes are going to be fun to write. You can find the Dark to Light podcast with
Supreme Court Justice Frankie Val.
And Beans on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com. Hang in there for the weekend, and we'll be back next week.
Bye-bye.
If you love motorcycles, I invite you to listen to Life in the Fast Lane, hosted by me, Alan Lane, a.k.a. Mr. Black Moses. On Life in the Fast Lane, I'll be talking with everyone about everything motorcycles. If it has two wheels, and in some cases three, it's fair game for us. Road racing, drag racing, stunt riding, custom bikes, gear, motorcycle clubs. Everyone from pro racers, brand ambassadors, industry insiders, and celebrities to the rider from right up the block. You'll hear them all right here on Life in the Fast Lane, hosted by me, Alan Lane, a.k.a. Mr. Black Moses. Life in the Fast Lane can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.